forward, forward, march, forward, ever, backward, never, forward, ever, backward, never. Do you know that phrase? We know it now. I'm Danny Schechter. I'm your News Dissector here on News Dissector Radio. Every week at this time on PRN-FM, Kat Waters in the studio. Say hi. Okay, your mic isn't up, but she's saying hi anyway. And we're going to talk about...
Check one, two.
We're going to talk about an event that's coming up in simply 26 days by our count, which could be off. The American election in November, on the 6th of November, deciding very important questions of political weight and scope. And we'll tell you more about that in a minute. We're also going to be talking about the voting and people who can't vote and various problems with voting. We have Greg Palast, the author of Billionaires and Ballot Bandits, telling us how to steal an election in 9 easy steps. So we're going to hear from him. We're also going to hear two other guests that have been very active in the Occupy movement, organizing around issues of finance, campaign finance, and also the way to think about changing our elections. Who are they, Kat?
Well, first we're going to have Rick Dice from Ending Corporate Personhood Working Group, who will be via landline. We did a nice petition on Saturday trying to educate the public on the street. He came to Bay Ridge in District 11. We're trying to reverse Citizens United and educate people on exactly what that is.
And then our other guest in the studio with us live in person
is Tim Frawley, who is part of the Political and Electoral Reform Working Group, working on a voting experiment. And he's going to tell us the results and give us an update on that.
So all of that today on News Dissector Radio. We'll be with you in a second. We'll have Greg Palast with you. Stay with us.
One of the most important parts of a reform agenda is to encourage people to own something, to own their own home. Government must stand on the side of people. Because I understand if you own something, you have a vital stake.
I heard my dad saying we might lose our home.
My home.
3 million families now are said to be in danger of foreclosure. That's a 50-state Katrina. What started as manipulations and maneuvers on Wall Street has now moved to Main Street.
The cascading impact of the subprime mess is clear. No mortgage relief plan can undo the loose practices of the real estate bubble.
What goes up must come down. What goes up must come down. What goes up must come down. And that holds true. Foreclosures have skyrocketed, not because...
Hey, that's from a collage by Polarity One. We're going to be hearing some more of his music from his album, Free Money. Polarity One, Free Money. Free Money, but you have to pay, is actually the rest of the title. We'll hear more as the program progresses. But first, we want to welcome back on this program none other than Greg Palast, an investigator's investigator, a journalist who will stop at nothing to try to get at the truth, who has been in the muck and the mud of elections for some time now. We worked together on a film back in 2000 called Counting on Democracy, in which Greg exposed some of the practices in Florida that didn't allow people to vote and that also disenfranchised people. So now, as we approach this election in 26 days, Greg, you have a new book out, Billionaires and Ballot Bandits, How to Steal an Election in 9 Easy Steps. There's a comics by Ted Rall. There's an introduction by Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Are you here to tell us that the problem has not gone away, that this problem of electoral fraud, not voter fraud, is still with us?
You're kidding me. Yeah, they're out there. It's gotten worse. I mean, let's put it this way. The new Secretary of State of Florida makes Katherine Harris look like Thomas Jefferson in Pumps. It's gotten nasty bad. For those who don't know Greg Palast, I, with Danny Schechter, when we did the film Counting on Democracy, I was working with BBC at the time, we did a film in which we exposed how Katherine Harris knocked off tens of thousands of black people off the voter rolls in 2000. She said they were felons, criminals, not allowed to vote. In fact, well, they were criminals. They were voting while black. We're not guessing, because in on the Florida voter rolls, every black person has BLA next to their name, which, by the way, was originally meant to protect black people by being able to keep track of whether they could vote. It's now become a way in which those with malign databases can zero in their electronic drones on the black voters on the voter rolls. And it's back, Danny. I got to tell you, in Billionaires and Ballot Bandits, I have a chapter on the return of the Florida felon purge. I mean, tens of thousands of people have been identified as illegal voters, which, by the way, makes it an incredible new crime wave. I mean, you got all these felons ready to go back to jail just to vote for a school bond, even Obama.
Do we live in the United States of amnesia? Can't we remember that there was a problem back in 2000, that the problem persisted into 2004, and that it didn't go away in 2008, but more people turned out, which gave Obama the election? And it seems as if the media is just ignoring these problems. One of the things you point out here, that in the 2008 election, no fewer than 767,023 provisional ballots were cast and not counted. 1,451,116 ballots were, quote, spoiled. Not counted. 488,136 absentee ballots were mailed in but not counted. Why?
Why? Because someone doesn't want them counted. Someone wants votes to spoil. They don't spoil. You don't spoil 1.5 million votes by leaving them out of the fridge. Someone doesn't want those votes counted. And let me give you a hint. What do you think are the color of the votes not counted? Well,
But we have a black president now. We have somebody, a Democrat, running for office who's up against a Republican, very well-oiled and well-financed machine. Wouldn't he want to put an end to these practices? And why isn't he?
Let me explain. Number one, the chance of your vote spoiling, this is the official U.S. Civil Rights Commission analysis, is 900% higher if you're a black voter than a white voter, 500% higher if you're Latino than a white voter. So that most of the votes in the dumpster in America that get cast and not counted are cast by voters of color. Many people, special interests, want it that way. Now, you asked about one of these voters, African-American voters, the president. What is he doing about it? Well, let's not forget, there is the reason, ultimately, why African-American voters have been targeted is not color of their skin. It's the color of their vote, which is blue. And the other thing is it's class war. All vote theft is class war by other means. And the Democratic Party is pretty good at this business, too. Not as effective as the Republicans in terms of raw numbers of votes removed. But you would ask, why would the Democratic Party knock off minority voters who are mostly, or not stand up for them, who are mostly Democratic voters? And the answer is, all politics is local, and so is all vote theft. Besides Florida, the worst purging in the nation has gone on in New Mexico, where Hispanic Democrats have been purging illegally and deep-sixing the ballots of Hispanic Democrats, because Democrats hold firing squads in a circle, and the elite Hispanic Democratic elite of New Mexico, headed by people like Bill Richardson, don't want no poor Mexicanos voting because they won't vote for them in the primaries.
So are you saying, I mean, let me get this right, that this is like a massive problem in 2012, and yet when you look in the media at the political coverage, you know, which is every hour on the hour, updates, polls, debates, there's one tonight on the vice presidency, all of these events, these underlying trends are not even covered.
No.
Why?
Why? You tell me. You tell me, white man. The thing is that that's why we're talking on the Progressive Radio Network, because, as you know, in fact, Danny, is that, you know, I'm very mainstream. I am on the nightly news. I'm on the nightly news BBC television. These reports are at the top of the nightly news all over the planet except the United States of America. They were on the front page of The Guardian, most influential paper in English in the world, and all over the world. The problem is that where are they in the United States where they bounce off the electronic Berlin Wall? And I, by the way, have a chapter in Billionaires and Ballot Bandits, which you will love, Mr. News Dissector, called I'm Depressed. And it is why it's this top of the news, our elections in America being shoplifted by billionaires. Why is that news at the on the front page in Britain and news nowhere in America? And there's lots of answers, but probably one of them for sure is that when I talk about billionaires and ballot bandits, these are the guys stealing the election. Well, start out by stealing the whistle, the cop's whistle, and the cop's whistle is the media.
You know, just one point on the media, and then Kat has a point here. I mean, who are the beneficiaries of all the money that's being raised but television networks who are making money hand over fist for advertising? You know, here in New York, a few election cycles, as they like to call them, back. I don't know if this will happen again this year, but on Channel 7, ABC, the news was extended for a half from a half an hour to 35 minutes so that 5 minutes of television commercials in their, quote, inventory could be run back to back to back. I'm sure nobody stuck around to watch it, but it was a way of building up the bottom line of that television station, and I'm sure television stations across America. So in a
sense, you're talking about $3 billion this year being spent on ads.
It's
$3 billion.
It's over processed GMO type information. So you're not, you know, I mean, that's the only way I know how to put it. But could I just wanted to ask you a question,
sure.
Greg. I mean, what I heard is that they want to keep people, you know, like on welfare, kind of dumbed down and like dependent on the system so that they can guarantee those people's votes. And those people will want to vote for those people who, you know, who give them all the food stamps and, you know, kind of give them the sort of cushy life.
I don't agree with that.
No, I mean, I heard that.
Why would they do that?
They want to make
you stupid. They want people to vote on things about, and I remember being with Jesse Jackson. By the way, Billionaires and Ballot Bandits, which is put out by my not-for-profit foundation, and luckily it's on the Times bestseller list, but it's backed by a lot of good groups like Jesse Jackson's Operation, you know, the Rainbow Push Coalition. Now, and what he, I remember him in front of a black in front of a, you know, African-American church in Florida. I was there, and like about 5,000 people there. He said, how many people here, you know, want to get married to someone of their same sex, you know? And maybe two hands went up. Well, how many people here have a cousin in Iraq or Afghanistan? And tons of hands went up. I said, so what's the big issue here? So they want to distract people. They want to distract people.
But you know,
and I agree with that. But that's what they do with that media money. But what Billionaires and Ballot Bandits is about is they cannot, no matter how much brainwashing and dumbing down they do with their ads, they still the 1% can't win. The arithmetic is simple. If the 99% vote and the 1% vote, they lose, the billionaires. So they have to actually take away your vote. And that's why in 2012 we had 5.9 million votes and voters lost, and almost overwhelmingly it was voters of color, overwhelmingly and almost entirely poorer voters. And this time it'll be double. You're going to see 10 million votes lost, and you're going to see 10 Senate races stolen. Everyone talks about Obama and Romney, but man, it's the Senate races that they're going after. In Missouri, in Nevada, this is where you're going to see the big trouble.
And haven't they really shifted this whole issue and spun it in a way? They went from electoral fraud, which is what you were talking about, institutional patterns of disenfranchising people, you know, denying them ballot, you know, the right to vote or the right to have their vote counted, to so-called voter fraud, which the Republicans seem to have discovered as a massive problem that nobody else noticed.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I was even on, I was actually with a Republican disc jockey today who even said, look, I recognize, and we talk about voter fraud, but how often does that happen? And the answer, I'll give you the exact answer. There are 6 million voters who've lost their vote in a hunt for six, and I want to say that, six people a year who get convicted of voter fraud, because you know what? You always get caught. It's real easy because you give your address and you give your name and you give your location. You show up. It's pretty easy to get you.
Let me just
So basically, we are wiping out literally a million citizens' votes.
Have you ever seen a time when there was so much cynicism about politics? It's suffocating almost, and for good reason. You know, the debates, the discourse, the way it's talked about in the media, the stupidity of it all. It's just turning off and tuning out so many people. So I'm being handed a note here that Indiana's Secretary of State was convicted of voter fraud earlier this year. I mean, this whole idea of creating fear of voter fraud by people who are, you know, trying to bum rush the polls seems to be crazy. The real problem, I think, are people who don't want to vote, who are fed up with voting and disgusted by the whole process. I mean, Gail Collins has a column in the Times today. I wanted to get your reaction, Kat, your reaction. It says, it's a tough time to be a Democrat. When Democrats run into each other in elevators, they exchange glances and sigh or make little whimpering sounds. Democrats walk around repeating the comeback lines they would have given if they had been debating Mitt Romney in Colorado. They tell each other, now it's all up to Joe Biden. I mean, how low can you go?
Well, here's our big problem right now. We had the reason why Barack Obama was elected was a massive, massive youth vote, which absolutely crushed the vote theft. Because those numbers, those 6 million votes lost, that was mostly against would have been votes for Obama that got disappeared through some vicious maneuvers, which are going to be even worse this time. Now, again, I'm not a friend of Obama. I'm not any type of a big fan. Anyone read my work or the Democratic Party.
Wait a second. Just on a conspiratorial level, Obama is from Chicago. Greg Palast went to school in Chicago.
I lived in his district.
Therefore, do I have to say any more?
By association.
Well, yeah, I mean, and here's the real thing, is that in Chicago, hey, listen, Obama, you know, talk about disenfranchising voters, he became a state senator because he basically expunged the signatures of his opponent's petition. He did a Karl Rove. He challenged the signatures on the petitions of the incumbent state senator. And so she was knocked off the ballot. He ran unopposed. This is one of the problems when you ask why doesn't the administration oppose these efforts? Because Obama used them himself. I mean, and this is one of the problems against, and who are the victims of his vote challenging operation? Poor black voters in Woodlawn and on the south side of Chicago.
You're listening, let me just say, to Greg Palast, who Reverend Al Sharpton calls an inside-out Oreo. White on the outside, black on the inside. Now, that's a pretty good compliment right there.
Is that a compliment?
I think so. In Al Sharpton's mind, I believe.
Inside-out Oreo. It depends, I guess, who's licking, right?
But listen, I know that you are off to do a TV interview on RT. I don't want to hold you up. If you have to leave this moment, I'm trying to feature your points for a continuing discussion.
Too bad you can't
Go ahead, sorry.
Oh, Greg, you can't stay on because, you know, the next guest is going to be talking about a voting experiment with, you know, other alternative, you know, voting methods that you might be interested in listening to and asking some questions.
At the moment, our ballot is kind of a form of a political Russian roulette, so I'm up to anything. But I do have to get on, but I will do this. I will return because, and here's what I want people to do. Whether you get billionaires or ballot bandits or not, and I don't know why not, it's fun, it's short, you can stick it in your holster so you can take it into a voting booth in Florida where they think it's a gun, which is allowed. So billionaires or ballot bandits has the 50-page comic book by Ted Rall, but even more important at the back of it is the ballot condom for safe voting, 7 ways to beat the ballot bandits that protects your vote. If you're not going to get the book, or if you're interested, just want to take a kind of little look, but you want that ballot condom to protect your vote, go to ballotbandits.org, ballotbandits.org.
Greg Palast, Greg Palast doesn't only do a good job of telling, but he's a master of selling. Thank you for coming on at the last minute, the very last minute, to join our conversation. Greg Palast, author of many, many books and a tremendous body of work as an investigative reporter. And, you know, I wish that your work was seen in more visible outlets. I wish mine was as well. But, you know, particularly, you know, as we approach an election and we find that the same issues that we've been talking about year after year after year have not been reformed, have not been attended to, in fact, are still being buried. And the Democrats could very easily lose. They could have great polls. Everybody's talking about, oh, there are 3 polls that show Obama ahead. Those polls don't talk about voter turnout. They don't talk about who will vote and who won't vote and who won't be able to
and
vote.
And whose vote will be tossed in the garbage. You know, one of the things I talk about in the book, one of the 9 ways to steal an election, billionaires, ballot bandits, is caging, where Karl Rove's operation sends out letters to black colleges in August, where kids aren't there, to elderly Jewish voters in Miami in August, where the snowbirds go north to visit their grandkids. He puts "do not forward" on the envelopes. The envelopes come back. That's called caged envelopes. They challenge these voters as fraudulent voters. Well, visiting your parents if you're a black student or visiting your grandchildren if you're a Jewish grandma is not disqualify you as a voter.
But it is
a
crime.
But they use that.
It is a crime in Karl Rove world, isn't it?
Yes, but I'll tell you, it's also a crime in Bobby Kennedy's world. A go-to-jail crime, he says this is a violation.
Dan, I just wanted to...
the laws his dad wrote.
So I just wanted to answer Dan's question about, you know, the United States of amnesia, like what's happening to the people. And it's right. So just like you have, you know, the lesser of two evils to vote for, the people are becoming either the squeezer or the squeezee. They're either getting paid to be the squeezer, you know, while other people are being squeezed out of the equation and left out of being able to vote and just being left out of life.
Well, what the worst thing we can do is do it to ourselves.
Right.
And I think one of the worst things of the debates is not that Obama didn't have slick answers to Romney's baloney, but that he didn't give people a reason to vote. And that's more important than scoring points. We have to know why people should vote for these guys. And the answer is because if you don't vote, the billionaires, in effect, vote for you. So you have to make the decision. I'm not going to tell you to vote for, but if you leave it to Karl Rove, he'll be happy to fill in your ballot, and you're doing that if you don't vote. I usually make a big pitch for voting because my issue is that they don't, you know, to protect your vote, for example, don't mail in your ballot. Gee.
What's your views?
Don't go postal.
What's your views on voting for, like, vote if they're not going to win?
Kat, he has to go to RT. Okay, let's let him go, okay? Or Vladimir.
Let me go.
Or Vladimir Putin.
I'll tell you what.
I'll be visiting his house.
I'll come back.
Okay.
I'll come back armed with a lot of ballot condoms and more info for the folks out there. But don't let them steal your vote. Steal it back. Billionaires and ballot bandits. But do go to ballotbandits.org, where there's no charge, to download that poster. of the seven ways to beat the ballot.
There you go. Thank you again, Greg.
Thank you.
Our number here again, 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. We want to talk with you. We want to hear from you about this election, not about the candidates you like or don't like, but also the whole process of it. Why are people that you know getting so turned off by the whole process, by all the media coverage of it that's so superficial, so much like a horse race that doesn't go into the important issues facing our country? How it's not only a question of commission, what's said, but omission, what's not said, what's not being reported. These are the issues that I'm certainly concerned about. I blog about them every day on newsdissector.net online. I write books about them. My books are Blogathon and also Occupy, Dissecting Occupy Wall Street. I want to create a discourse so that people listening to this program can also participate in it and pass the word on about it to others and know more about what's happening here on PRN-FM, the Progressive Radio Network. Doing these issues, we're going to hear a discussion of possible alternative ballots and different ways to think about the people in the big money, rooms that are pouring money, and the bundlers who are bringing the bucks into not just the campaigns, but into the TV networks. So the TV networks will continue to cover them, but no one else, not to cover any independent movements, any independent ideas. In a sense, they don't claim that it's bought and paid for, but in effect, it is. I mean, I spent 8 years working at ABC News. I worked at CNN. I worked at CNBC. I've been on the inside. I kind of know how it works. My first book is called The More You Watch, The Less You Know. And I haven't seen anything to discourage me from continuing to use that title. Kat?
Yeah, I just wanted to kind of raise this. Of course, the people can't see it. Republicrats. It's, an OccuCard number 15 of, why we occupy the two-party duopoly and, the illusion of the two-party candidates.
Well, that is a big problem, a choice. What choices we have and what choices we choose to exercise. We'll be coming back in a minute to discuss that and some other issues and meet some other guests here on News Dissector Radio. Here's Polarity One with yet another relevant tune. I'm so broke. Another song from the album by Polarity One, Free Money, but you have to pay. If you go to polarityone.com, you can download many of these songs about the economy, and I hope you do, because he's right on. He's on it. He's been also working on a radio show for Occupy that, is broadcast around the country. So polarityone.com. And his music, if you scroll down, his many songs are there. You can download them for free. So we try to bring some political music here as well as conversations about issues that matter. We're continuing with our conversation about the election, 26 days away. Tonight, the vice presidential debate is coming down the pike. The number to call if you want to join the conversation, 888-874-4888. I'm going to invite my co-host Cat Waters to introduce the folks that are coming on now, and then let's get into it. Let's get down on the issues.
On the phone, on hold, I hope he's not on hold anymore, Rick Dice, who I met at Ending Corporate Personhood Working Group down at the 60 Wall Street. It started about a year ago. Is that correct, Rick?
Yeah. Hi, Catherine. And
hi.
It all started at the beginning of Occupy Wall Street protest. I was down there talking to people, and, you know, there were as many issues raised as there were people, it seemed like. And so I started thinking as a strategist, well, which issue should we work on first, or how should we get this group to be able to be successful? And what it came down to after talking to people was that we needed to get the corruption out of politics first, because whatever issue we raised, if it was an environmental issue, a peace issue, a social justice issue, a poverty issue, it was going to be blocked by both the Republicans and the conservative Democrats, because all of them are beholden to special interests. And what even made it worse than it had been was the Citizens United decision, where the Supreme Court decided that we couldn't have any limits on campaign finance. So there's unlimited anonymous money pouring in. That gave the rise to the super PACs. And with all this money, it's basically an individual's vote versus a corporation or a huge, a rich entity that's giving large amounts of money. Who's the politician going to listen to? They're going to listen to the big money, not to the individual voter. So we thought if we could get a reverse Citizens United, get big money out of politics, that will even the playing field, and then we can start passing some of this legislation that we want and make some of the changes we want. And at the same time, coincidentally, I saw a documentary on PBS, which is a great educational network. There's a lot of educational information, and I think that's why Mitt Romney wants to cut the funding, because they don't want educated voters.
Sure.
But what the PBS special was about was how they passed the Prohibition Amendment. And they did that with a minority of voters, but what they did was they got together into a voting bloc. So you had the right-wing teetotalers who thought that drinking was immoral, and then you had the left-wingers who were trying to protect society by getting rid of spousal abuse and child abuse, which they believed alcohol caused, so they were the social reformers. These left and right-wing groups got together and formed a voting bloc. They would only vote for a candidate who would support this constitutional amendment. And because they had enough swing votes, they basically could control every election in the country. So they elected people to the U.S. Congress and to the state legislatures who would back this amendment. And within 17 months, they had passed a prohibition of alcohol in the entire country. We want to use the same model, get people from the left and right who are against corruption in our political system to get rid of Citizens United so we can again limit campaign contributions.
It sounds
One last quick thing is that we have already a supermajority of Americans, right, left, and center, who favor getting rid of Citizens United.
Right, so it's all about getting to the core and the common ground that most people can come together on, right?
Exactly. You've got 85% of Dems, 81% of independents, 76% of Republicans who support getting rid of Citizens United.
Okay, I just wanted to, we also have Tim Frawley in the studio and Cecilia Frontero from the Political Reform Working Group. So, yeah.
Wonderful.
Tell us about what you guys are up to and how that got started.
Well, the Get Money Out of Politics Working Group was actually formed originally to mark the anniversary of the Citizens United decision, the second anniversary of the Citizens United decisions, with two actions that spanned the course of 2 days. One was Occupy the Courts, and one was Occupy the Corpse, as in corporations. And then once the actions were over, they were pretty cool, by the way. Once they were over, the group was left to decide if they were going to disband or continue on. No plan had really been discussed for the post-action. So after much discussion and thought, we decided to change our name from Ending Corporate Personhood to Getting Money Out of Politics. So we are now in the process of working through an organic strategic model to help us move in a direction to address the very toxic problem of big money in our governance and our electoral process.
Maybe we should just clarify, maybe for people that are listening, what it, Citizens United is. Tim, you want to do that? Or Rick? You want tell the audience what Citizens United
is? It's Rick. I'm happy to.
Yeah, go ahead.
Citizens United was a Supreme Court decision from 2010 where the court decided that corporations are people and money is speech, some of which was based on previous court decisions, but obviously those are nonsensical concepts to anyone, you know, any thinking person. But the court kind of reasoned that because corporations are made up of people, that they should be considered people in terms of the First Amendment, meaning people have the right to free speech as under the First Amendment, so corporations should have the right to speech. And they also ruled that money is speech, which means campaign contributions are speech. And because it's very difficult to limit speech, because the First Amendment basically, you know, protects almost every type of speech except yelling fire in a crowded theater, they said that, therefore, you can't limit money in campaign contributions because you're limiting speech of the corporations or of the rich people who are giving those huge amounts.
Well, we've heard about this and the fact that Occupy Wall Street, which started out with a financial focus, came to recognize the importance that money was not just a problem on Wall Street, but it was also a problem in our political system, and they want to deal with that as well. And it became an issue which is very much part of the debate, although you wouldn't necessarily know it by watching a lot of mainstream media where they track who's giving what, but they don't really comment on or discuss the implications of it all. Jim, for all you've been listening in here very nicely. I want, but you've also have a slightly different angle on all of this, basically saying, look, how can we reorganize our political system so that it's more promoting of democracy and less promoting of special interests, among other things?
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about your own work and your experiment and the other efforts that you and your colleagues have tried.
Well, in our group, which is the Political and Electoral Reform Working Group, we started off, you know, about a year ago, asking ourselves the question of how, what kinds of reforms can be implemented to open the political system to all of the millions of people who are marginalized by the big parties, by the two-party state. You know, what's you know, there's the old joke that American politics runs the gamut from A to B.
I'm not laughing anymore. Okay, go ahead.
You know, and it's, you know, it's no coincidence that Democratic and Republican lawmakers write the rules for the electoral game, and that the rules are rigged in the favor of them. Yeah, that's not a coincidence.
So, you know, before we, quote, do something about it, we have to think about what we want to do, what is possible, what are the options, what are the alternatives, what kinds of reforms would make sense. If you have some thoughts on this, by the way, the number to call, 888-874-4888. It's a free call. We actually have a call.
Oh, hey. So,
John, you're with us. Hi. How are you?
Hi. So I understand that about 80% of Americans want to get rid of Citizens United. And I'd like to ask Rick specifically, if he was talking to moderates, people in the middle, say a conservative Democrat, a liberal Republican, somebody in the middle, what two or three points would you bring out to convince them that getting rid of Citizens United is a really critical issue?
Well, fortunately, I don't think there's too much convincing necessary since we already have 81% of independents who are opposed, but I would tell them that if they weren't sure or didn't know about the issue, that our system is set up where politicians are supposed to be beholden to the voters, not to special interest groups. And if they want their individual vote to count as much as anyone else's vote, we need to get the big money out of politics, because right now an individual's vote is nothing compared to millions of dollars that are being poured into political campaigns. These candidates need that money in order to win. So they're going to be beholden to who gives them that money rather and ignore the individual voter.
A lot of the candidates seem to think it's important to remain competitive, is how they call it. And in fact, I just looked at some figures in the Center for Responsive Politics, which tracks political donations on a website called opensecrets.org. And what I found that as of August 31st, and of course this doesn't count what's happening now, which is when a lot of the big money is being spent, but as of August 31st, Barack Obama had actually raised more money than Mitt Romney. So the two parties seem to be raising a lot of money. They're going to spend billions of dollars on this election. I think $6 billion, not just on the federal elections, but all of the elections. A tremendous amount of money, given the fact that we're in an economic depression. But nevertheless, this is something that people are giving money to, giving time to, and are concerned about. And I want to come back to you, if I can, to talk about Where can we go with this other than remain? We started talking, Catherine. I'd like him to get a word in, okay? Mm-hmm. Please.
I think there are a lot of different reforms that can be implemented that can open up in the political system. It's just a matter of people, informing themselves about the possibilities and overcoming the idea that it's impossible to change anything.
Examples?
In our group, some of the reform recommendations that we have are alternative voting methods, independent, nonpartisan redistricting, actually enlarging the size of government in the sense of creating smaller districts. The size of the U.S. House has not increased in 100 years. The constitutional limit for the size of the House, I think, is one representative for every 30,000 people. Today, there is one representative roughly for every 700,000 people, right? The more people they represent, the less representative they're going to be. Things like proportional representation, ballot access reform, making sure that the parties aren't rigging the rules of the electoral system to keep other candidates off the ballot, to keep, Greg Palast brought up before how, Barack Obama and his state Senate campaign challenged the petitions of his opponent and knocked them off the ballot and ran unopposed, and that's how he got his seat. Well, that's what Republicans and Democrats do all the time. If a Green Party or a Libertarian or Independent candidate gets does all the work to petition their way onto a ballot, the first thing that the major parties do is challenge all of the signatures on those ballots to get them knocked off. I mean, that is how. That's how they maintain. That's one of the tactics by which they maintain their duopoly on political power at all levels of government.
Tim, can you talk about your voting experiment?
Yeah, one of the electoral reforms that we support are alternative voting methods. So one of them, if you ask political scientists, so why are we stuck with these two parties? They'll tell you about something called the plurality voting system, which is everyone's familiar with. This is the system is the voting system that we use. There's a set number of candidates on the ballot, and you cast your vote for one, and the person with the most votes wins. That's called plurality because you don't actually need a majority to win that election, right? If there's three candidates or four candidates in that election, someone could win with 34-35% of the vote, which means the majority of people actually oppose that person, but they will win. They will end up representing everyone. Because of the nature of the voting method that we use. So in our group, what we did was we created an experiment to test a number of alternative voting methods against this plurality system. And specifically, we're comparing three other methods with plurality. And I guess I'll tell you what they're called very briefly. One is called, maybe if you're familiar with alternative voting methods, one of the most prominent ones is called ranked choice voting or instant runoff voting, which instead of just ticking off one candidate and the candidate with the most votes wins, voters rank the candidates in their order of preference, and then the election is tallied as an instant runoff. And this way, so let's say you're an independent, you're a progressive independent, and you want to vote for a progressive independent or a green But you're afraid the Republican is going to win, so instead of voting for the person who actually represents you, you vote for the Democrat because you're voting against the Republican. So this is how a lot of people vote. You know, this is the lesser of two evils voting. You know, it's like a lot of people don't vote for the candidate they like. They vote against the candidate they hate the most.
It sounds like debt voting. You're actually coming from the negative side.
Exactly, yeah. It's voting. It's like if most votes for Democrats or Republicans, I think, are votes actually against the other side. So that's one alternative. Two other alternatives.
But there's also, you know, the biggest party in politics is not the Democrats, not the Republicans.
Well, I was just going to add that there are statistics that indicate that there are more American citizens who self-identify as something other than either Democrat or Republican. And but for two sitting senators, the entirety of our federal electoral system, is either Democrat or Republican. That is not representative.
Well, where I was going with that was, I agree with you. I take your point. But where I was going with that is Robert Reich, as a former labor secretary, has a column about this. I quote it in my blog at newsdissector.net today, where he says that the biggest block of are non-voters. People who are not voting, generally speaking, in our election, you know, American election turnout is among the lowest turnouts in the world. A lot of people don't like the choices or the lack of choices that we have and don't vote. And they're not voting because they can't, but because the system, first of all, makes it hard for people to vote. You know, in some cases, I mean, I remember being in Florida where, you know, if you live north of Miami, and the polls closed at 6 p.m., you couldn't possibly get there if you were getting on the highway from South Miami to get there. In other words, the voting, instead of putting it on a Sunday or on a weekend, it's on a day which is a working day, and many people can't afford not to work. So there's that. But there's also the fact that many people just are fed up with the electoral system as it is. And of that number, some would rather vote for smaller minority parties or vote their hearts, vote what they really care about.
Well, and interestingly, during our experiment, what we found when we were polling, actually, I'll let Tim get into that a little bit more, but when we were polling the public on alternative voting methods, people were actually delighted to find out that, first of all, that there were alternative voting methods and what that would actually mean to them as citizens and the choices that they would have with some other method than the one we have in plurality.
Rick, you were about to say something?
Yeah, I was going to say, as far as people not participating, I think a huge percentage of those people see the system as totally corrupt and they don't want to be involved in it. And then you have the plethora of negative ads, which have even increased with the limits on campaign funding coming off. Those are proven by, you know, time and again to turn off people from voting, which is, again, why I think the first step to all of this needs to be to overturn Citizens United and limit campaign spending. And one other reason I see that is because that has the support of 80%+ of Americans. All of the ideas that Tim was bringing up, I totally agree with, and many of them are specifically mentioned as phase two of what we're working on. But phase one has to be something that's got widespread support so the politicians cannot possibly block it. They're going to block any change in the voting system because it's going to threaten the Republican and Democratic mm-hmm. Party. Eliminating Citizens United will not technically block the two-party system, but it will weaken it substantially, and so it will pass. That we'll be able to pass this, whereas a lot of the stuff Tim's talking about, I don't think will pass until we get rid of Citizens United.
Well, one of the reasons why we're focused on alternative voting methods is because constitutionally, manner of holding elections is left up to the states, and state constitutions leave it up to localities. So alternative voting methods are actually something that can be implemented at the local level. And this is why we chose to focus on this, because it's a means by which people across the country can empower themselves and their local government to institute alternative voting methods. You know, this is some pie in the sky fantasy scenario. Alternative voting methods already are in use in the United States right now. San Francisco uses instant runoff voting. Portland, Maine, I think St. Paul, Minnesota, I think 12 or 13 different cities across the country use it. So, it's not a matter of, it's not it's not a matter of something as seemingly daunting.
It doesn't have to pass anything.
Exactly. You don't have to go through the Congress. It's not like trying to pass a constitutional amendment. It's something that people can
do in
their local elections.
What I take interesting and why I really was enthusiastic about your coming on the program, and Catherine, was a real advocate for your participating, in part is because a lot of people think that movements for change are just against. They're against the system. They're against the police. They're against capitalism. They're against everything. But, what are they for? And now we have people who are actually exploring what we can be for that might make sense, a lot more sense than what we have right now, as alternatives. And I think the idea of getting rid of a Supreme Court decision, is that going to require a constitutional amendment?
Yes, it will require a constitutional amendment. Fortunately, it will probably take less time than people think. 8 constitutional amendments took less than 1 year to pass. The 26th, giving 18-year-olds the right to vote, took 3 months and 8 days. And prohibition, which is pretty major and opposed by the majority of Americans, really only took 17 months with the swing, with the voting bloc idea.
Can I
make one more quick point? I appreciate what Tim's saying about how a lot of the things that he wants to change can be done at the local level. But you have to remember two things. One, that's trickling up, and that's going to take a huge amount of time, and it's going to be very uneven across the country. And two, you're still dealing with Republicans and Democrats who are going to block it, whereas if we go the way of the constitutional amendment, we can actually get that passed because we have 80%+ of Americans strongly in support of overturning Citizens United. I think we should start with that. And he can, in parallel, work on these other things. But once we pass our amendment, we can all do it from the top down as well as the bottom up.
Catherine?
I just wanted to quickly mention for the people that don't know, the candidates who actually pledged to support the amendment, which is Henry Hank Bardell and Mark Murphy. And the candidates who do not pledge to support the amendment to overturn the Citizens United is Michael Grimm.
And that's in New York's 11th congressional
right.
district, Staten Island, Bay Ridge, and Gravesend, where it's our first opportunity to try out what we're our voting bloc idea.
I've always seen Bay Ridge as the epicenter of the United States and of the future.
Saturday Night Fever.
So to speak. So, at least these issues are being discussed at the grassroots. That's what I think is really exciting. That's what democracy it's supposed to be about, people participating in decisions, people debating ideas, people making a difference and not just showing up ritualistically every 4 years and voting for candidates that they haven't really picked and in a race which inevitably ends up people, kind of becoming more and more alike. I mean, look at Romney now. He's moving rapidly to the center to moderate his positions because he knows the positions he started with do not have majority support in this country. And we're going to see more of that. And we're in a system of manipulation, media manipulation, which is a very important component to all of this. The idea of having sensible alternative to what we're doing now, the idea of getting rid of Citizens United, as attractive as it may be, will only gain critical mass if and when more people in the more voices in the media that influence what the public thinks and what the public thinks about, get this information. And I think the fact that these working groups at Occupy Wall Street have had the courage to really spend a lot of time thinking about them in a sensible way and now sharing them. And we're very delighted that you guys could come on the program today to raise these points. I'm just going to ask you quickly if you could tell me if there's a website or some place where people can go to get more information. Do you want to start?
Sure. If anyone's interested in learning more about our voting experiment and the comparison of the three alternative voting methods with plurality, they can check out our website, which is paercom.net, paercom.net. So that's the Politics and Political and Electoral Reform Committee.
Rick?
Yeah, you can go to nycga.net, the official Occupy website, and look up search for Restore Democracy, which was our original name, or go to EcoHearth, ecohearth.com, and search Revolution, and you can see our strategy. It's called Revolution Made Easy, How Occupy Wall Street Can Change the World.
For more about Greg Palast, the PalastInvestigativeFund.org has information about projects he's been involved in. My blog at newsdissector.net contains my raves, rants, analysis every single day. You have another one?
And if people want to go Wednesdays, 5:30 and 7 p.m. for either one of these working groups, it's at 60 Wall Street, the atrium at 60 Wall Street.
We are meeting in the bowel of the beast, so to speak, and talking about these issues, which makes me very encouraged that at least this discourse is going on. Thanks again for joining us. We're going to be going out with another song by Polarity One. If you have any comments or thoughts, you can write to me at dissector@mediachannel.org. Dissector@mediachannel.org. I'm Danny Schechter, your news dissector, here with Cat Waters on PRN FM.
Got free money, but you have to pay. Got free money, but you have to pay.
Shop till you drop.
The American way.
Got free money,
but you have to pay.
From the sea to the shining sea.
Got free money, but you have to pay.
Signing up for bankruptcy.
Got free money.